Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to today. It's Wrestling Night in America here on PWTorchDailyCast.com. I am Pro Wrestling Torch columnist Greg Parks, and we're coming to you live talking fallout from Survivor Series from Boston, Massachusetts, which just wrapped on Peacock and the WWE Network. And we'd like to hear from you. 515-605-9345 is the number to call. You can press 1 on your keypad if you'd like to get in line to talk. We'll put you on air. You can also email us, wnialivecast@gmail.com. So we'll walk through the results of Survivor Series, and then we'll go to the phones and go to the emails if we get any. And you know, every weekend we're here on Wrestling Night in America. So if you're tuning in for the first time, thank you for joining us. But we are here each and every Sunday night, usually, when there's not a pay-per-view or PLE. And we're on at 8 p.m. Eastern talking to a member of the Torch family. So we'll be happy to have you along each and every Sunday night. You can find me on Twitter at Greg M. Parks. I tweeted along with this pay-per-view if you'd like to give me a follow. Always love interacting with fans there. But real quick, since we've got some people on hold, the Survivor Series, subtitled War Games this year, they got rid of the elimination matches, which is sad to see it go, but I think it had long worn out its welcome. Certainly the Raw versus SmackDown Survivor Series elimination matches didn't carry the same weight they once did. So I was sad to see them go, but understood why the change was made. The show started with a War Games match, the women's War Games match. It was Becky Lynch, Bianca Belair, Asuka, Mia Yim, and Alexa Bliss defeating Damage Control, Rhea Ripley, and Nikki Cross when Becky Lynch defeated, I believe it was Dakota Kai. She pinned at the end of that one. I really liked this match. A lot going on in this one. A lot of star performances here. And people who've listened to Wrestling Night in America in the past know I'm very high on Bianca Belair. That being said, I think Rhea Ripley just has so much promise. I think she's a star for the future that I hope they're able to build around in some way, either as a babyface or a heel. Obviously, great to get Becky Lynch back after the injury she suffered at SummerSlam, get her back into the mix. Really gives Bayley two superstar baby faces to play off of as a heel. I think there are people who would argue that Damage Control and Bayley's return have not been as hot as they could have been. So really no excuse now with Lynch and Belair, both options. And you can imagine Lynch is going to be coming after Bayley after the attack at SummerSlam. But yeah, this was a fun match. I thought everybody really looked good. And it was a really positive way to start the show. So I really liked that opening match. Of course, we had the weapons that were brought into the match by Nikki Cross. We had them in the men's match too. I was hoping they would limit them to just one match. At this point, if that's going to be the norm going forward, and that's what we've seen with Triple H produced War Games matches in NXT, you might as well just make it a feature of the War Games match rather than have to have someone at some moment pull them out every time. So that's just kind of my take on it. AJ Styles defeated Finn Balor in match number 2. I thought this was a really well-worked match. My main complaint with it is that I just didn't really care all that much about the story and, you know, who's the leader of the club, who's the real leader, who's the best leader, you know, that sort of thing. It didn't resonate with me. So it was, again, a really good match, as you would imagine a match between AJ Styles and Finn Balor being. But I think the crowd, judging by their reaction or lack thereof, seemed to kind of be in the same boat. And it didn't work, I don't think, as well as it should have, and as well as a match between two pros like this really should have worked, because, again, it really was a well-worked match. Match number 3 was Ronda Rousey defeating Shotzi to retain the SmackDown Women's Championship. This probably could have been even shorter. I mean, you start off the show with two really long matches. Certainly the Women's War Games match, very long. Styles versus Balor was a long match. I think you even, and this was not a long match necessarily, but I think that you could have even trimmed a little bit off of this, just based on the fact that Shotzi was not someone that anyone had taken seriously or would take seriously as a challenger to Ronda Rousey. I don't think that anyone thought seriously that Ronda Rousey's SmackDown women's title was in jeopardy. So I think you probably could have trimmed some time off of that. Not that the show even ran long. I mean, we're sitting here, it was about, you know, 3 hours, 15 minutes, which for two really long War Games matches is not bad. And for a marquee event as Survivor Series is, was not bad. But I thought that, you know, having a quick match to kind of give a breather, if you were going to do it, this was the match to do it in. Match number four was Austin Theory winning the United States Championship in a triple threat match against Bobby Lashley and Seth Rollins. Lashley ended up spearing Rollins, who had Theory up for a suplex, and Theory kind of landed on Rollins. Lashley seemed to hurt himself on the spear and could not capitalize. So that was the finish to this one. I know there was a lot of hand-wringing when Theory cashed in his Money in the Bank contract for the U.S. title and lost, but since then he has taken a new attitude and now has won the U.S. title in this way. So I think that has sort of made up for the way he lost and coming off kind of like a schlub a little bit, and cashing in the briefcase and not winning and then cashing in for a secondary title on top of that. So I think the Theory, I think they wanted to try to get him away from the gimmicky, selfie, funny character, and they needed to give him a little bit more of a serious edge in order to push him. So I don't think this was a case of WWE giving up or burying Theory. It was just they needed to get him to that next level, and sometimes you have to take two steps back to take three steps forward, which I think is kind of the mentality they took with Theory. This is a really good match. You know, it's just constantly amazing to see the strides that Lashley has made throughout his career as a younger guy who was very bland in the ring, did not offer a lot, to a guy who now is a top performer in the business, even at his age. So it's really cool to see him continue to put on really good matches as well. And then match number five was the Bloodline defeating the Brawling Brutes, Kevin Owens, Drew McIntyre, in the War Games match. It was Jey Uso pinning Kevin Owens after Sami Zayn had reiterated his loyalties to the Bloodline after they came into question on SmackDown on Friday. So Sami Zayn stopping Kevin Owens from pinning Roman Reigns after the stunner and giving the haluva kick to Kevin Owens, allowing Jey Uso to pin him, and Jey Uso hugging Sami Zayn after the match in celebration was a sight to behold for sure. So all is right with the world of the Bloodline right now. I think anyone who's watched wrestling for a hot minute knows that things will eventually go south for Sami Zayn and the Bloodline. I just think that, you know, there's a lot of speculation that Sami Zayn will turn on the Bloodline as a babyface. I just think fans are too invested in Sami Zayn as a member of the Bloodline for them to accept him turning on them and being a babyface. I think what would need to happen for him to turn, you know, real babyface, I guess, in real line with Kevin Owens, is for for the Bloodline to turn on him. And that's going to be, it'll be interesting to see what leads to that, but I'm sure Kevin Owens will play a part in that. So, again, remains to be seen, but I think that's kind of the way things are headed if I had to have a crystal ball. So again, for those just tuning in, as we've gone on the air, I am Pro Wrestling Torch columnist Greg Parks. You can find me on Twitter at Greg M. Parks. You can find me here on PWTorchDailyCast.com each and every Sunday night that there's not a pay-per-view, 8 p.m. Eastern. I have a member of the Torch family as my co-host, riding solo tonight with a pay-per-view, and we have quite a few people on hold. So all that I ask of our dear callers is to keep your questions and comments confined to three so that we can move along at a reasonable pace here on a Saturday night. And we'll start things off on the phones with the 410 area code. It is Reverend Keith from Baltimore, Maryland. Reverend Keith, welcome to Wrestling Night in America tonight.
God bless you, and thank you for taking my call. I will be brief. I just want to allude to all of the matches, give an overview, and then I'll let you marinate and give your opinions, which you already have in certain points. I thought that the show was very timely. Now, I do agree with you that they definitely should have cut off at least 4 minutes from the women's title match, which was a cluster, to say the least. I mean, it was botches. They made the referee look stupid. And I had tweeted that Ronda must have Shayna as a part of her contract because this was ridiculous. Basically, to have been in a match against someone like Shotzi, there was no need for Shayna to have constantly over and over and over interject herself. That made the match even worse. So I wouldn't have given that any star rating. I thought that the both War Games matches were excellent. Ironically, Greg Parks, the women's match, believe it or not, clocked in at 11 minutes, 58 seconds once the War Games officially started. The men's match clocked in at 10 minutes, 32 seconds. Now, I just want to say this. The AJ Styles-Finn Balor match, I would give that 3.5 stars. That was a well-worked match. And, you know, these two can't put on a bad match. And finally, it's just a matter of time, like you said, before this thing goes south with Sammy and Roman. If you notice that epic stare down in the locker room when both Sammy looked scared to death and Roman looked like an Italian mafia boss about to apply the hit, that was epic storytelling. Epic storytelling. Yeah. So I thought overall it was a good show. The storytelling was excellent. Everything else was excellent. So thank you so much for taking my call, and just let me know your thoughts on this show.
For sure, Reverend Keith. Thanks so much for calling in. I really liked the show. I think that you bring up a good point about Shayna Baszler's interference in Ronda Rousey's match. Unfortunately, in WWE, it's not about, they use the interference spot for heat. It's not about, you know, hey, this person shouldn't need interference to beat this other person. It's just about a cheap way to get heel heat. And I agree. I don't think it was necessary. I think you have to have heels, especially champions, eventually just put away someone who is below them and well below them, someone like Shotzi, who I like. I mean, I think Shotzi is a great character to have on SmackDown in the women's division. But, you know, I think the story was pretty clear that she didn't really have a shot at beating Ronda Rousey. So the heat is on Ronda in part because she used the interference when she didn't need to. And unfortunately, WWE goes to that well too often. Ultimately, though, I think Shayna Baszler is a net positive for Ronda Rousey. It gives her someone to play off of. We know that Ronda can be very awkward when she's out there alone. Maybe you could argue that she's even more awkward out there with Shayna Baszler, who herself isn't all that smooth at times. But I think, you know, for those who wanted more of the Shayna Baszler that we saw in NXT as the sort of killer submission machine, unstoppable force that we just haven't seen on the main roster. You know, we've seen tag team Shayna with Natalya and Nia Jax, and WWE not seemingly trusting her in a major pushed position for any amount of time as a singles wrestler. I think this is more toward that avenue with the Shayna that we saw in NXT, or at least working toward that at some point down the line. So that's kind of my hope there with that. All the other stuff, Reverend Keith, yeah, I agree with most of it. Styles and Balor, I liked that match too. Just, I mean, again, the story, just it was paper thin. There wasn't a lot to it, wasn't a lot to get into other than just, hey, it's a really good match. And unfortunately, we're in an era where that's no longer good enough. You know, you can turn into television, whether it's WWE or AEW, each and every week and see sometimes four-star matches every week. So just being a good match in this era, there's got to be a little more meat on that than just having a good match. Let's go to our next phone call. It is the 478 area code. It's Darrell from Georgia. Darrell, welcome to Wrestling Night in America tonight.
How you doing today, Greg?
I'm doing well. Thanks for calling in. What did you think of Survivor Series?
It was good. It was good. The last match was just as exciting as the Michigan and Ohio State game. But, you know, hey, it was very good. this had to be some of the best storytelling, though, that I must say I have seen in WWE in a while. From the Roman sit-down talk with Jey Uso to the sit-down talk with Sammy, the look that he gave Sammy when he gave Sammy the hug at the end of the at the end of that talk, like, hey, if you come out here, you do one thing, he's like, I'm gonna put the gun to your head myself, and I'm gonna excommunicate y'all. And then the story between Sammy and Jake throughout the whole, and how Roman was playing with everybody's emotions and everything, and orchestrating it, and setting them up with the pit against each other to all the way to the end where you thought when Jey super kicked him, this was a chance. But it was a nice word that Sammy finally just broke down and said, okay, that's my family. Because before any time of year, he was like, you know, that we the bloodline. And then he went back and used what Roman told him, like, this is my family. And then when he said family, and he hit KO with the low blow, and then he walked over there to Roman and asked, what you want me to do with it? That's the same thing with Jey was saying in his conversation with Roman. That's how in-depth the story was. He went over there and said, go ahead, finish him off. And it was amazing.
Yeah.
So that type of storytelling, I got a two-part question. This is 9 weeks until Royal Rumble. How much story does this story bring to this? And my second question would be, do you see this last until after WrestleMania, and then you can start telling the breakup of Roman and giving a woman a part in the bloodline, a part two that doesn't have a title in it, just in case Roman didn't lose the title?
You know, I've seen... and I think you bring up a good point. 9 weeks now between there's apparently not going to be a December pay-per-view. NXT has a show coming up on Peacock next month, but you know the next one they're plugging is the Royal Rumble in January. So I know that there was a day one initially seemingly scheduled, but then not scheduled. But it looks like the Rumble is going to be the next show. So WWE not used to booking such a long length of time in between major events. So we'll see if they kind of spend some television time on some major matches, see if they have some major title matches that maybe they would be culminating to or building to at a December pay-per-view and have them on a special episode of SmackDown or Raw sometime in December. It's going to be interesting to see. It's going to be – I kind of think that they do the breakup before – WrestleMania, because I think you can really do a Sami Zayn, Kevin Owens, Usos tag title match at WrestleMania. I know there are people who actually think that is not a high enough place on the card for Sami Zayn, and there are some people who would love to see Sami versus Roman at WrestleMania. I think there's a better chance of Sami and Kevin against the Usos than there is Sammy versus Roman Reigns. I'm not sure if WWE, even with this bloodline story, and even with as much as Sammy's stock has risen in the eyes of fans, I'm not sure WWE decision makers see him as the kind of WrestleMania main eventer he would be against Roman Reigns. I wouldn't rule it out of hand, but I just think there's a better chance of Owens and Zayn versus the Usos. Now, the next question is, how do you get there? Right, because he cemented his. I mean, there was no, there was no second guessing. There was no turning back based on what Sami Zayn did tonight to his former best friend Kevin Owens. I mean, he is solidly in the bloodline. So, if we are to go with the idea that the bloodline turns on Sami Zayn, what would lead them to do that? Even if you bought the idea that Sami Zayn turns on the bloodline, like, I mean, what would have to happen between now and WrestleMania for that to occur? So. It is so written in stone, Sami Zayn is part of the bloodline now. It's going to be interesting to see how they eventually get out of it, because I think ultimately that's going to be the thing, right, is that Sami Zayn either by his choice or not, ends up on the outside looking in, and there's a major story with Sammy versus the Bloodline, Sammy and Kevin versus the Bloodline, however you want to do it. But how they get there is really going to be interesting, because they certainly cemented Sammy as part of the Bloodline tonight.
Yes, they did. And having him come out first by himself with Paul Heyman on this press conference, speaking for the Bloodline and everything, and I guess they have him playing even more heelish, even though Elimination Chamber is in Montreal. So, you know, he would get big pops there, and they could build that pay-per-view around Sammy and whatever you do. But, yeah, that was good. Now, to talk about the U.S. title, I know some people was upset by how they did Austin Theory before and now let him win and stuff like that. So I look at it as they got 9 weeks to build to the Rumble, because the Rumble ain't until January the 28th. They booked themselves into a weird corner by this triple threat and being handed with Austin Theory with the Money in the Bank, and to get that off of him. How do they spend these next 9 weeks to course correct whatever and, I guess, build to a big match, since – they trying to make the United States title the biggest title on Raw for Seth Rollins and Austin Theory to a big showdown, showcase, one-on-one match. That's why they didn't give that away tonight.
I mean, it's entirely possible. Even though Theory pinned Seth Rollins, Rollins does kind of have the out that Lashley speared him when he had Theory up for a suplex. So he's got that excuse. So I think, you know, Theory's got two opponents he could go one-on-one with, Seth Rollins and Bobby Lashley. You could do one at the Royal Rumble. You could do one on TV as a major Raw main event, you know, build it up for a few weeks. Or you could do both on TV and have Theory as a legitimate Royal Rumble contender by that point. So it's wide open right now for Theory. I mean, he's in a good spot. He's got two top contenders that he can go over to continue to build him up. And you know, by the Royal Rumble, like I said, he could be, you know, if he defeats Rollins on TV, if he beats Lashley on TV, retains the U.S. title, goes into the Royal Rumble as United States champion, having those two wins in addition to his win tonight, you know, I think you're talking about a real person who could be in the conversation for Royal Rumble winner, and there are only, you know, three or four of those every year, but Theory could be that guy in 9 weeks. That's plenty of time to build him up to be a real threat in that match.
Yes, sir. They really can. It is interesting to see, or you can make whatever match for the United States title feel even bigger, even though, you know, the Rumble is built around the Rumble, and you got to have one-on-one matches in between. So,
sure.
That's another thing. Now, the women's match, I like how that was constructed. It told a story as well. Becky coming back and stuff like that. So I'm wondering, where do they go with this? Who will be the next challenger? And what do you see this going and leading up to? Because I thought Rhea would have a bigger impact on it, but after she got missed, she was kind of out of it for the rest of that match, mostly.
Yeah, you know, it's you have a big star like Becky Lynch coming back. She's a babyface, obviously. You've got a big star in Bianca Belair coming back. She's a babyface, obviously. The nice thing about it is you have a potential challenger to Becky Lynch in Bayley. And so that answers the question of how do you do a babyface versus babyface Raw Women's Championship feud between Belair and Lynch, both of whom are loved by the fans. You don't want to have to make the fans choose, at least right now. But, you know, Lynch has that taking care of business that she needs to get done with Bayley before she can do anything else. So I think that should be her direction first. And then Belair, I mean, you could go Rhea Ripley, even as you said, she didn't play a big part down the stretch in the match. you know, could you do something with Nikki Cross? I don't know. Maybe that seems more like a title match on TV. But I really think, like I said at the outset, I see Rhea Ripley as, you know, potentially a huge star going forward. And, you know, I wouldn't mind them building Bianca Belair versus Rhea Ripley for the Royal Rumble. I think that could be a really strong undercard match. You know, I hesitate to take Rhea out of the Rumble. Maybe you could still have her in it. But, you know, I think that would be a Royal Rumble-worthy match. But we'll have to see what direction they go in.
Got you. Well, this show was pretty good. Except for two of those regular matches, everything was pretty straight, well put together, and the storytelling was A1. I just end this with this last question with you. Based on the storytelling that we've seen tonight, when was the last time on WWE main roster have you seen storytelling this good like you've seen in throughout for the main event throughout the whole pay-per-view? With the main event and the storylines that they drip through the pay-per-view?
I would struggle to come up with a one, you know, maybe Savage and Hogan back in the day, but that was a long time ago, you know. So they've had the luxury of this being a main event storyline that Vince prior to Triple H and Triple H have paid a lot of attention to, and a lot, obviously, in Roman Reigns. So this is a story that has gotten a lot of time that other storylines that could have been very good have not gotten. But just the length of this storyline, and to be this far into this story and still have fresh chapters to go and still have so many avenues to explore, I don't know that there's been anything like this just for the sheer longevity of it. So, you know, there have been other long storylines, other good storylines, but perhaps none this good for this long with still places to go. So, Darrell, thank you for calling in tonight. Always good to hear from you on these post-pay-per-view shows.
Good to hear from you too, Greg. And you got to put on this this press conference in the background, man. A1 stuff right now.
Oh, no. No one got into a fight again, did they, like the AEW one? What's going on this time?
Oh, no. Just the things
okay.
They had them talking about.
All right. I'll have to check it out, maybe read a recap later. Thanks, Darrell. All right, back to the phones we go. It's the 623 area code. I believe this is Brian from Phoenix, Arizona. And, Brian, I you're going to be upset at me. I don't have the number. How many years subscriber to The Torch?
Hey, Greg, 31 years.
31 years. I'm writing that down so the next time you call in, I can put that right along with your name, Brian. Thank you so much for calling in here. Thank you so much for being a subscriber to The Torch, pwtorch.com/govip is, of course, where you can go. Brian, love to hear your thoughts on the Survivor Series War Games event tonight.
Thanks, Greg. Always good talking to you, and congratulations to you, by the way.
Oh, I appreciate it. Thank you. For those who are not aware or who didn't listen, last week I got engaged recently, so that's very exciting, and I appreciate the sentiment.
You're welcome, Greg. I enjoyed Survivor Series War Games a lot. Just like you, I'm a little nostalgic for not getting like the normal 5-on-5 or 4-on-4, you know, depending on the year. Traditional Survivor Series matches. Huge fan going way back to 1987 when they had the first one. And then same thing similarly with the War Games. You know, I go back to watching that one, the first one with NWA back in 87 as well. The one thing I'll say about the original War Games, Greg, is that was when I did have cable, so I watched the buildup to it. But since there were no newsletters, since I did not subscribe to a newsletter back then and they were rare, back then, I never really found out how it actually happened until like the you know Pro Wrestling Illustrated magazines came out, and I can you know that's six weeks later to find out exactly how the matches went. But you know, just to see the clips on TV and see the two cages and Dusty Rhodes and Arn Anderson starting off, you know, it's just you know as a huge wrestling fan back then, it was like I really wanted to know what happened, but you know you had to wait to find out what happened. So just a totally different world, of course, way back then.
Yeah, absolutely. Now we can express our thoughts online in real time about what's going on. And Pro Wrestling Illustrated just seems like a relic from another generation, which, of course, it is. But, I used to – gosh, I remember I was a subscriber when I was younger to – not to get off on a tangent here, but WWF Magazine. I had a subscription to that when I was younger. Never – you know, I'd go to the newsstand for the PWIs PWI 500 I always bought for a couple of years running. And there was one magazine, and I can't remember what it was, but I remember I went to the mall, and, you know, my parents would go shopping, and I'd hang out in the magazines and the bookstore. And there was one magazine that when they would tell the stories, they would have all the wrestlers' real names in parentheses. And that just blew my mind, Brian, let me tell you, to read all of these wrestlers' real names at such an impressionable age when you don't even think about the wrestlers having real names. That was wild to me. So, yeah, it's definitely a different generation today.
Really quick. So, yeah, for several years, I've subscribed to all of the PWI family magazines, and I was so excited when they would come in the mail, and I could see, you know, Larry Zbyszko says that since he's the AWA champ, he beat Ric Flair and beat Randy Savage. He should be the number one champ, according to their rankings. One really quick thing, though, Greg, and I think the magazine might have been like Ion Wrestling was the name of the magazine, because I was talking to a friend of mine online a couple of weeks ago about this magazine was the one who actually told me about who Demolition was. Like, they talked about, okay, first it was Moondog, Rex, and then he got replaced by Smash, and Axe was the Masked Superstar, because, you know, I didn't know, you know, of course, Masked Superstar has a mask on, so how would I know what he looked like, you know, and then actually had makeup on. And, you know, this was Smash, was used to be Crusher Khrushchev, and, was like you said, Greg, it was like blowing my mind. I'm like, man, how did, you know, all this stuff that was going on that I had literally no idea about. So, like you said, today's, you know, wrestling fans are just, you know, just don't know what we had, you know, me being the old man kind of thing, you know, and I had to walk to school, you know, 2 miles in the snow, blah, blah, blah. So,
but, uphill both ways. Don't forget that.
Exactly. let's talk about wrestling. I'll get off so you can get off the phone so you can have some other callers on. I really always appreciate talking to you. And hi to Reverend Keith. Huge fan of Reverend Keith and Darrell as well. So I'll talk a little bit about – actually, I'm going to go this way with you, two things. First thing, I always love when Asuka does the green mist, so I pop when she did that to Rhea Ripley. That's always one of my favorite things. Samantha Irwin, the ring announcer and the SmackDown ring announcer, I asked Travis Bryan of the East Coast – of the PW Torch East Coast cast, I should say, about her. And, you know, he wasn't as – you know, I think she's good, but she's, like, really over – I won't say over the top, but she's getting close to the edge there. So I'll ask you really quick about this, Greg, about what is your thoughts about, you know, the ring announcer should be like, you know, kind of in the background, you hear people's names and you go, you know, talk about old school, you know, that's what you heard from old school refs. But now, you know, Samantha Irwin is like way over on close to being on the edge as possible as far as announcing people. And when she announces Gunther and Gunther, you know, it's just the way she announces it. It's just – and Imperium is just incredible. So what is your thought about her?
I had never really given much thought to her as a ring announcer before tonight. and I think I noticed the same things you did, and it was like – it was kind of grating. I wasn't really a fan. And I don't know if it was just because, like, it felt different than how she usually does it, or if it was just something I didn't like the tone, inflection, the whatever it was she was doing tonight. So I don't know if it stood out to me because it was different or because I didn't like it or whatever like that. But I definitely noticed her announcing a lot more tonight than I've ever noticed it before, probably.
Interesting. Yeah, the next time when, like, Imperium comes out, just listen to how she says it, and then we know we can talk later about it. So you talked about this – well, you talked about a lot of stuff earlier. You talked about the entire card. Is that – and Darrell talked about this a little bit, and, you know, you added to the part about – you know, Darrell talked about how many weeks it is or how many days it is until the Royal Rumble. But, you know, when Seth Rollins won the U.S. title. He won for the U.S. title on Raw. So, you know, yeah, we think about these, you know, big premium live events. But, you know, title changes happen on Raw and SmackDown. I can't say all the time, but enough as well. So, but I want to get to the question about what's next for Ronda Rousey. Because, like you said, you know, Shotzi was a good challenger of the month. And that's what we need to have. You know, everybody does need to get, like, you know, A1 pushes. And we do need, you know, the old adage, monster of the week, or maybe monster of the month. And not to say that Shotzi's a monster of the month, but that kind of adage about you have a person that just comes in, title, she challenges for the title, and she just doesn't win. But if we have, you know, Royal Rumble coming up next, we have Elimination Chamber, and then WrestleMania, and knowing that probably Ronda is going to have Shayna Baszler at the hip with her, what do you think? Who do you think will be a next challenger to at least build up until WrestleMania? I'm not sure what they're going to do with Raquel Rodriguez. Hopefully I said that right. That because she changed her name, like, what, four times? Is that, you know, they say she has a broken arm or dislocated elbow, probably both, about how could they stretch it out? Could they stretch it out to the Rumble, or could maybe do Elimination Chamber? So just what your thoughts on what's next for Ronda Rousey?
I think Raquel would have been an interesting choice for being next, but, you know, they made mention she's out, I think they said 4 to 6 weeks. And I don't know if that's to hide a real injury that she's going to be out for, or if they're legit just going to keep her on the sidelines 4 to 6 weeks to sell this. But, yeah, that would be, I mean, by the time she gets back, if they do keep her off TV, by the time she gets back, that would give a couple weeks to build to the Royal Rumble. So Rousey, Raquel for the Rumble, I think would be a pretty decent. I mean, I think they see big things in Raquel Rodriguez just by the way she's been booked. But until then, you know, you've got Emma, who's new on SmackDown. I don't really know how WWE management views her. You know, she was one of those players for Triple H very early on in NXT who had a couple matches that helped put that women's wrestling on the map. And so, you know, maybe Triple H's regime has bigger plans for Emma than another regime would have had.
Right.
But yeah, I don't really see anyone. I mean, I would not make Ronda Rousey an every week character on SmackDown. I just wouldn't. I think she loses her specialness by doing that, even though she's champion, and you know, you have that, although it's not enforced, you have the 30-day window ideally where you'd like to have a champion defend the title, so you'd want to do that on SmackDown probably before the Royal Rumble hits. But you could build up something real quick over a few weeks. And you know, the other thing you have hovering over this whole situation, which I feel like we talk about every month, is the pending return of Charlotte Flair, which we just don't know when that's going to be. Do they save her for the Royal Rumble and have the big return? We know WWE historically has liked to save big returns for the Royal Rumble match itself. Certainly, I think SmackDown Women's Division could probably get along between now and then without Charlotte being on the show. So they could hold off on having her. But I think, you know, that's always going to be where they go back to with Ronda. We just don't know how soon.
I would agree, Greg, and I'm not that excited about, you know, Charlotte versus Ronda, you know, but, you know, given that we have some time here, we can freshen it up and Charlotte can get energy back to face Ronda. And then we have the added dynamic is that this time Ronda is a heel now and would assume that, you know, Charlotte would be a face. The other thing that as we talk here is that I remember that actually, was this before Ronda got her title back? She actually had a TV match against Raquel. I'm not sure if it was she had her title back or not. So I'm not 100% sure about that.
That was really early on in Raquel's call-up, I think. So I'm not sure if she had the title then. Yeah.
Yes. And, you know, and again, Greg, my thought is like, just like with the way we're doing with Shayna now, is that you could build somebody up over a couple months and you can see them being a killer again. You know, they'd be kind of hard for some people to do it that way. But, you know, I think that if given enough energy with it, that could happen. Greg, as always, it's great talking to you. Let some other callers get on the line and let you read some emails. I hope you have a great night. And thanks a lot again. Thanks again. Everybody go VIP. Greg mentioned it. It'll be 32 years in February the 6th. will be 32 years unbroken with the torch, and great everything with the torch. So again, Greg, thanks a lot again. Have a great night, and I appreciate everything you do.
Thank you, Brian. Appreciate you calling in. Always love hearing from you. Again, pwtorch.com/govip. Not only do you get ad-free access to many different audio shows, there's many VIP audio shows, including one that's probably being recorded right now, the Survivor Series Roundtable with some big wigs within the Torch. And, of course, you get the PW Torch newsletter along with it and my column each and every week in the Torch newsletter. That you can look forward to, pwtorch.com/govip. Next call is from the 914 area code. This is Brad from Florida. Brad, welcome to Wrestling Night in America. What did you think of Survivor Series?
Hey, Greg, thanks for having me on, man. Appreciate it. I'll try to be quick. And listen, I don't want to be Debbie Downer. I did enjoy certain aspects of the show, but some things were a little bit puzzling. And to me, going in, did not really understand the War Games rules. I know they flashed them on the screen. It's just kind of one of those things like, oh, I'll just kind of figure it out as it goes along. Yeah, you start and another person comes in. Okay, I got it. And I didn't really realize that every single thing that was leading up until the 10 people were in the ring was essentially meaningless, even though there was, a lot of stuff going on. And I find myself kind of missing the elimination aspect of Survivor Series. Like, I thought what the rules should be adjusted to or should have been is something like, people are getting pinned throughout the match and you end up with a War Games elimination match, which is kind of the impression that I was under. I didn't read the rules carefully enough, but I mean, one pinfall, that's almost like we're going to play an entire football game and no matter what happens in the first four quarters, that now means nothing. Then we're just going to play in overtime and see who scores first. So even if the other team's up 24-0, we're going to play that overtime, and if you kick a field goal, you win. So, like, that's kind of what – I don't know if that's a good enough analogy, but one pin in a match like that, to me, doesn't make sense. I mean, that should have been people getting eliminated, and you could have had cool scenarios where you have, a 3-on-1 or even a 4-on-0 or – you could have had just people waiting and celebrating the ring for one person to take on four, which still would have given you that old Survivor Series feeling with this new concept of the two cages and the two rings. So I think they didn't blend it well enough, in my opinion, for this type of match. And again, I wasn't familiar with the match, but another thing that,
Brad, can I jump in and just comment on that?
Absolutely.
I do want to comment on that. Part of me wonders, and we got an email from Brandon LeClaire, who's a Torch contributor. He's been a co-host with me on Wrestling Night in America before. We got an email from him. He was there live, so I'll read that a little later on. But one of the things that was pretty noticeable was the lack of crowd reaction by the fans in attendance. And you do have to wonder if there was some confusion about the rules, same as you had, amongst the fans, that maybe muted the crowd reaction. They've done War Games in NXT before, but we've seen that the crossover of NXT viewers with WWE viewers, at least the NXT version that was on, that was on the WWE network, is pretty small. And obviously the people who remember War Games from WCW is probably even smaller than people who watch and were in the crowd in Boston tonight. I do wonder if that played a part in the crowd not reacting as much as you would have expected, given the star power in some of these matches. And the other thing I will say is I think those rules, and they've tweaked some rules, they've changed some rules from the WCW version of War Games, that rule has not changed, and I wonder if the difference is why it was more accepted back then is because the focus was on the violence of the match. I mean, you had guys in War Games bleeding almost every year in the NWA and WCW version of it. So the focus was on, when you are in that cage before the pinfalls can happen, you are being beaten to almost literally a bloody pulp. I mean, it is a survival. It is violence. And with today's WWE, that's not the story they're telling. They're not telling the story of it just being a violent encounter. That's not part and parcel with it. So I think to keep the rules but lose the focus kind of loses the effect of those rules to begin with. So that's an interesting point, Brad. I'm glad you brought that up. I'll let you go on to your next point here.
Well, thank you. And my next point was actually going to be something that you brought up, which was the lack of crowd reaction. I think, you know, it just seemed to me, and I never know in matches that are cage matches, if just the crowd can't see particularly well. Like normal things that usually, even on a regular SmackDown, that a crowd will go crazy for, a Drew McIntyre kip up, you know, even when Solo had that spot where he kind of like, you know, did his Uranagi onto the table. I forget exactly what it was, to be honest with you, but where he kind of went, you know, kind of faced the hard cam and let out a big scream. Like, there was no reaction for anything. And even at the end, when that match was kind of the men's match and the women's match were kind of nearing their conclusion, no one was standing. There was very little reaction to anything. And I think part of that, which I found interesting, was I understand the wrestlers had their entrances and they had their music. Obviously, they didn't make their way to the ring. They just stood in the aisleway. But when we're getting music for a running, you know, in the middle of a Raw or whatever, would it have been so bad to have played Roman's, you know, music or Kevin Owens' music as they were exiting the cage and coming to the ring? I think that, you know, I remember Steve Austin on a podcast years ago saying, well, why does, you know, the music play during a run-in? Because he's like, because, you know, I guess a listener had asked that, and he said, you know, it's because it just brings the drama and the excitement to another level, and that's why we do it. And I just felt like them walking in completely silent with the, you know, the 10-9-8-7-6-5-4-3-2-1, and then them just walking in silently to the ring kind of just fell flat to me. And I think the music was needed for each individual wrestler. And I was kind of surprised they didn't do that for each of them. So, but yeah, the crowd reaction was, they were just very silent. Like, it just didn't feel, look, I can't compare it to Clash of the Castle, but, you know, nothing compares to that kind of crowd reaction. But even other pay-per-views, even Money in the Bank, you know, like, when Liv Morgan won, you can't compare anything you saw tonight to even half of that. So those are just some criticisms I had of it. And you know, other than that, look, I enjoyed it. Did I think this was like, wow, like one of the best paper? Not at all. I mean, I didn't think that this was so great. And again, I found myself kind of missing the Survivor Series format of eliminations. And you could have done them quickly, and you could have done it in a cool way, which would have made it really interesting. I think and I will hang up after this, Greg, but I do think the crowd would have gotten into it if you had like a 3-on-1, like, you know, like four of someone's teammates have been eliminated and now they're up against the impossible. That's when the crowd starts to get into it. Like, wow, will they pull this off? Can they pull this off? That's what was lacking from this match. You know, you didn't have anything like that. It was just like, oh, who's going to take the pin? Okay, it's over. Like everything that happened, The first nine people, it didn't matter. Now it matters. You know, like it, I just didn't like the rules. So again, thank you so much for taking this call. And again, not to be ultra critical of this, but just wasn't crazy about it.
No, I think that's a fair point, Brad. And I appreciate you calling in because I think, you know, for fans who have watched since those WCW NWA War Games days, they probably have a lot of fond memories of that style of match. Even the NXT War Games, you know, they can be long, they can be kind of self-indulgent at times, but they're, you know, pretty good. I think they don't take into consideration the new fan, the WWE main roster fan who maybe never seen this type of match before. And I think you're right about the numbers game. You know, the heels had the advantage in the women's match. Okay, that's basic booking. The baby faces had the advantage in the men's match. So, you know, I get not wanting to have the heels have the advantage and tell the same story in two of the matches, but having the baby faces get the advantage is not, you know, very baby face of you. There's a reason why all the Starrcade War Games matches had the heels at the advantage, and they only did one match a year, so you could get away with having the heels have the advantage every year. but yeah, I think that to some fans who have not seen this before, who don't have the nostalgia for it in the way that other fans do, or the way that certainly Triple H does, where he can kind of gloss over some of the faults, I think, you know, I think you bring up some good points. And having an elimination style or doing something like that would break up the monotony of one team, the same team getting the advantage every other time, if you wanted to do it that way. So, again, we've got Brandon who's got an email sent in to us. If it's not too late, if you want to send an email, wnialivecast@gmail.com. We've got one more caller. It's DJ from Miami. DJ, welcome to Wrestling Night in America tonight. What did you think of Survivor Series?
Edit. Undo. Step. No. Did you skip delete? Selection deleted. Did you see the video when some fan came off the Black Lantern?
DJ, are you there? Nope. Okay. That was strange. All right. Let's go to the email. I think DJ may hop on again here soon. So, again, Brandon LeClaire, PW contributor who does a lot of work at the Torch, and he's going to do a write-up, actually, a little later on in the week. So pwtorch.com is where you can go to find that. But he sent an email in. He was there live in Boston. He says, legit sellout with a great atmosphere. The garden and the surrounding area were decked out when we arrived yesterday with banners on light poles, advertisements on doors, arena steps, etc. Crowd arrived early and was full of excitement. The line wrapped all the way to the back parking lot with 2 hours until showtime. Merchandise has been heavily streamlined. The normal concourse stands feature 7 to 10 designs, mostly show and city specific. If you want the more traditional WWE shop style wrestler tees, you have to go to one of a few larger stores that take over the team's pro shops for the night. He says, I've seen conflicting reports about the crowd. They were loud in the building, especially for the U.S. title and main event. Sami Zayn may have been the most overact on the show, followed by Reigns, then Rollins. They announced a return to Boston in March for Monday Night Raw. Thumbs up show for me. Lots of good to great wrestling. Love the storytelling in the main event. Excited to watch it back and get a full live report done for PW Torch later in the week. So that is Brandon's write-up from having been there live. I thank Brandon for sending that in there tonight. And, you know, obviously the biggest piece of news that he shared with us there is the crowd and how it was, I think, pretty significantly different from what we felt at home. And it did seem like WWE was sweetening the crowd in a different way than they usually do. It seemed to be more of a buzz rather than maybe it was just better mixed than they had been doing when they were doing it over the summer. But I noticed. I didn't think the crowd was as hot. Of course, you know, when the crowd is sweetened, you can't really tell the authentic reactions of the crowd. You're just assuming the crowd is not with it because they're going to the lengths of sweetening the crowd. You know, they wouldn't do that if it was a hot crowd. So I don't know. Be a situation where they didn't mic the crowd well or something like that. But Brandon's report seems to conflict with my own version of having heard it on Peacock. And certainly if you were on social media tonight during the pay-per-view, there were lots of people questioning the crowd as well. So certainly heard the "We want Sasha" chant in the women's match. That was very evident. They didn't need to, although I think they turned the crowd down after they heard those chants. But yeah, interesting notes from Brandon there, having been in the crowd live. So thank him for emailing us. You can email us anytime, by the way. Next weekend we'll be on the air 8 p.m. Eastern, unless there's another surprise pay-per-view, because this one took me by surprise. Last week after the AEW pay-per-view, I said, yeah, we'll be back 8 p.m. Eastern on Sunday, and I totally blanked that there was a Survivor Series show this weekend. So I can pretty confidently say next weekend, next Sunday, we'll be back 8 p.m. Eastern. I will have a member of the Torch family. We will preview. There's two shows on December 10th. One is the NXT show, and one is the ROH show. So that'll be a big preview show. We'll preview both of those cards. And then obviously on the haven't decided on the 10th or 11th whether we're going to do a show, whether we'll do one after those shows on the 10th or whether we'll do one on Sunday the 11th at normal time. Certainly I'll have that for you next Sunday night. But Yeah, thanks so much for calling in. And again, email us anytime, wnialivecast@gmail.com. Love getting emails. I understand that people can't always call in and share their thoughts. So throwing it out there right now, if you have any thoughts on the upcoming ROH pay-per-view or the upcoming NXT event, the special event that they're having, please email us your thoughts, your questions. We'll talk about them next week on our preview show with the co-host that I have for the week. So that'll do it for tonight. Survivor Series is in the books. War Games, mixed reaction, I think, but overall a positive, I would say. I really appreciate everybody's participation. And don't forget pwtorch.com/govip if you are not a VIP member. So you can follow me on Twitter @GregMParks. You can find my column each and every week in the Torch newsletter. And we'll talk to you next Sunday, because if it's Sunday, it's Wrestling Night in America.